T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Go there.
With Shira and Ryan.
Oh my God. Entertainment.
Music. Pop culture.
LGBT plus news. Let's go there.
Start now.
Happy Tuesday. What's going on? I'm Shira.
And I'm Ryan.
And this is Let's Go There. We catch you up on everything you might have missed throughout the day. And we include some of our crazy lives as well into this. It's going to be a great show. We have got from, you know, one of your favorite shows growing up, actually, Ryan.
It's not your... did you ever watch this show?
In Canada, we didn't really have Nickelodeon.
What?
No,
lies.
We didn't have it at the time when
lies.
I was growing up. I'm not kidding. And I am a bit older than you, so I kind of miss that era.
Wow.
From Drake and Josh, actor, musician, Drake Bell is going to be here in studio.
You know, it's so wild about him because he's been in all types of trouble and like, he's like finally, doing, you know, all of this stuff with music, and he's kind of coming back into the forefront. But it's just so interesting to kind of see him coming into our studio, and when it's nostalgia for me. But I'm also like wanting to ask very juicy questions.
Oh,
like I want to kind of go there with him. I just feel like is he ready?
There's
to
something
go there?
Specific you want to ask, and I don't know.
Well,
if I'm
I want to ask about
it.
His nudes. I want to ask about his
You're
jail time.
You're gonna scare away our guests.
And there's so many things. He's so opinionated, like online. So it's kind of like, why not come on our show and be opinionated?
Let's just
don't hold back now.
Yeah, let's just have him go there. I mean. Were those photos leaked or did he leak them?
I think they were leaked, unfortunately.
Okay. All right. Well, that sucks.
Not unfortunate if you saw them.
Okay. Well, then, we've also got our cue of the day. Does having a daily routine make you happy or bored? And you can give us a call at any time. Our number is 833-77-CALL-Q, 833-772-2557. We'll get to your responses, in 2 hours, because it's a 3-hour show, at 6 p.m. Pacific.
In 6,000 years, we'll be talking about it.
At 6 p.m. Pacific, that is 9 p.m. Eastern. Okay, we're going to get into what's trending in the news right now, top of the hour. Hundreds of people gathered in New York City on Monday to demand justice and accountability for the death of Lalene Kubilet-Polanco, also known as Lalene Extravaganza. Lalene was a 27-year-old Afro-Latina trans woman who was found dead in her cell at Rikers Island on June 7th. A beloved figure in the city's ballroom scene and a member of the House of Extravaganza, she had been held at the Rose M. Singer Center Women's Jail on a $500 bail for misdemeanor assault since April. Speakers at the June 10th rally repeatedly honed in on the facts surrounding her death, arguing that cash bail, the use of solitary confinement, systematic neglect, and other facets of New York's criminal justice system all contributed to ending her life when it did. Many of the speakers implored that the 600 plus attendees and thousands of others live streaming the rally from the other side of their phone to do something about it. Unfortunately, another death, whether it be on the streets or in jail, something needs to be done because it seems like, you know, the police force in general does not know how to handle things like this in the right way.
Interesting thing is New York just did a whole bunch of stuff. The New York City Police Department just did a whole bunch of stuff in taking accountability for Stonewall and showing kind of their major support for the LGBTQ plus community. But unfortunately, there's still so much going on systematically that, you know, just giving an apology and giving little pins here and there and doing all these little things doesn't seem like it's enough when there's a bigger problem systematically. And there's people, a part of our community, especially trans people, that are losing their lives. And we're seeing that because of mistreatment and other things and neglect. So I think there's so much more to be talking about when it comes to being an ally and showing support. But we say your name, and it's very sad about this story because it's also connected to Pose, the show that's returning tonight, actually.
Oh, wow.
One of the major mothers, or like the leaders of House of Extravaganza was a major leader in teaching the cast about the ballroom culture and the scene. So it's very close to everyone's heart.
All right. Well, Vice President Mike Pence voiced support yesterday for the Trump administration's move to prohibit U.S. embassies from flying the Rainbow Pride flag on their flagpoles during LGBTQ Pride Month, telling NBC News that it's the right decision.
When it comes to the American flagpole at American embassies and capitals around the world, having the one American flag fly, I think, is the right decision. And we put no restrictions on displaying any other flags or any other displays at our embassies beyond that.
LGBTQ rights groups and some of U.S. diplomats have raised concerns about the decision, arguing that it contradicts the Trump administration's claims to be a leader in promoting rights for the LGBTQ community around the world, which, as you might know, Donald Trump did tweet that he wanted to be like a leader in supporting the community and that the world needs to stand with the community and all that.
He had no clue. He doesn't even know what those acronyms stand for. He's like, what does LGBTQ+ stand for?
Is it a different type of alphabet?
Yeah. Is it something about, I don't know, barbecue? Who knows? Trying to figure it out.
Now, the House approved a resolution greenlighting the House Judiciary Committee to go to court to enforce its subpoena for former White House counsel Don McGahn's testimony and to seek grand jury information from special counsel Robert Mueller's report. We're going to have Richard Fowler here from Fox News to break it down for us and to find out if this means that we're closer to impeachment. Because it seems like continues to be the question. That's coming up right after this on What's Trending in the News. You're listening to Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan on the new Channel Q on your radio and radio.com.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan.
We are continuing right now with What's Trending in the News. And in the soap opera that is Capitol Hill, we are still trying to subpoena Attorney General William Barr and former White House counsel Don McGahn.
I mean, honestly, when is this going to be over? Yeah. Or is it going to be like the longest running season that's beating Grey's Anatomy?
I mean, I didn't even include the fact that we're still trying to get that Robert Mueller evidence.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here to break it down for us, Richard Fowler, Fox News contributor and from Fowler Nation. Welcome back to the show.
It's good to be back with you, Sharon Ryan. How are you guys doing?
Hello.
You know, we are great. We're trying to understand all these things that got approved today from the House Judiciary Committee and the Justice Department, who seem to be striking these deals. Tell us what's going on.
And what is Nadler talking about? Because, honey, I don't understand.
Listen, I think it is very hard to understand. Here's basically what this all boils down to everybody listening and watching at home, is the Justice Department feels as though they've already released the redacted version of the Robert Mueller report, no underlying evidence, to the American people. Democrats in the House and folks on the, I would say there's some Republicans of the Intelligence Committee in the United States Senate who want more information. They want to see more. They want to see the unredacted copy released. They want to see the supporting evidence. And it is a battle back and forth to see who will capitulate first, who will give evidence first. And so all these small maneuvers are just about that.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think the game plan and the playbook from Nancy Pelosi is the ideal that over time, if we allow these investigations to continue, this will give, you know, those folks in the progressive part of the party what they want, and investigations against Trump into his mouthpiece and into his wrongdoing. And at the same time, we'll pass legislation like, you know, H.R. 1, which was basically a legislation that worked on securing our voting systems, or they would pass a prescription drugs bill, which they passed a couple weeks ago, or last week they passed the Equity Act, right, which makes it easier for LGBTQ folks of color and LGBTQ folks generally to go to work, to play, to, you know, get housing,
yeah,
to get married, all of these particular details.
Well,
now here we... Keep
going. You're telling us a story.
So this is just what folks... This is basically what this all boils down to in the end, is a battle over the White House not wanting to give information and folks on the in the House of Representatives trying to get more information. That's basically what it is.
It's like a okay. tug of war that doesn't end.
So, yeah, it's the battle of the info wars. So I guess the interesting thing for me is with this deal, I guess, that they've striked, like House Democrats have kind of striked with the Justice Department, will they actually get, you know, the report without redactions? Because we know that there's all these redactions in this report, and I feel like they're expecting to get everything, you know, unredacted.
Well, I mean, we'll have to see, right? And that's what the battle is going to be about. Jerry Nadler, who's the chair of the Judiciary Committee, is going to continue to push for more and more information. And at the same time, what you're going to see is you're going to see Republicans in the House try to speak about why that's horrible. And you're also going to see the White House try to stop them getting this information. I mean, the White House feels though this information will be detrimental to the president. The president lives in this world where he feels his full exoneration from collusion and from obstruction in the Mueller report, and thus he wants nothing else to do with it. Whereas in there seems the Mueller report really says that while there was no collusion with the Russians, which I'll be grateful for, it indicates seven different instances in which the president could have possibly obstructed justice.
Oh my God. This is crazy. And then there's also the fact that the House Judiciary Committee, they said they would enforce its subpoena for McGahn and William Barr. But then there was also an agreement struck that they won't take action right now. So what does that even mean? It seems just like it's hypocritical.
Right. So basically what happened there was a subpoena issued for McGahn, who is the former White House counsel, the former White House counsel, to testify in front of the House Judiciary Committee. Don McGahn exerted executive privilege and said he was not allowed to testify by the White House. Then there was a subpoena issued for William Barr to turn over information. Both of those subpoenas were basically violated, or the subpoenas weren't followed as ordered, and thus this led to Congress, the next step for Congress to take, which would be to vote them into contempt, both William Barr and Don McGahn. Now, a contempt vote by the United States Congress really doesn't mean anything. It's sort of like a how you've been held in contempt, unless there's one time in American history which was actually used, which was when they went to go get the congressional police can go on and get somebody and they can lock them up in the Capitol, but it's never happened since 1848, so it probably will never happen.
So at this point, what does that mean for the future of getting subpoenaed?
Yeah, they violated a subpoena.
So what does that mean for future, politicians or people in the government that do get, subpoenaed? Does that mean they don't really have to follow the rules at this point? Because it seems like there's just a breakdown of what you're allowed to do and what you're not allowed to do. And clearly it's just up for free game.
Well, I mean, this is what it boils down to. And I think this is the argument that you're going to hear Democrats and people who really care about make, is that the idea of disobeying congressional subpoenas, this idea of not listening to Congress, this idea of feeling that you're above the law and you're above congressional oversight could be a dangerous precedent set for American government and for the American president.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much again for joining us, Richard Fowler from Fox News and Fowler Nation.
Thanks,
y'all.
See you later.
Thank you.
See you, Sam.
Have fun wherever you are on the East Coast. Now, ex-Nixon White House counsel John Dean said this is worse than Watergate. So just I thought that was a really powerful statement right there. We're moving from what's trending in the news right now to the top stories in pop culture and entertainment news. What's the tea?
Okay, so, the Jussie Smollett thing is just never going away because Empire co-creator Lee Daniels is no longer supporting Jussie, and he had a lot to say. Find out coming up in 7 minutes. You're listening to Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan on the new Channel Q on your radio and radio.com.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan.
All righty, we are back with What's the TR Entertainment Pop Culture Stories of the Day, honey. You don't even got to worry about it if you missed it because we're going to update you.
True.
So, okay, this one, I am honestly so done. I thought we were all over talking about the whole Jussie Smollett situation. Mm-hmm. We didn't know if he was telling the truth. We didn't know if he was lying. We just didn't know. And at the end of the day, it just brought up a lot of probably uncomfortable conversations for a lot of people.
Oh, yeah.
And then, of course, Empire, the hit show that he was on Fox, it announced that their last season was going to be after this next season, season 6. And Jussie was confirmed that he will not be returning to the show. And Lee Daniels, who is Empire's co-creator, desperately wants to believe that the accusation that Jussie kind of put out there he wants to believe that the accusation that the show's former star Jussie Smollett staged a homophobic attack on himself isn't true. He went on to say how embarrassed he was. He says, I'm beyond embarrassed. I think when it happened, I had a flash of me running from bullies. I had a flash of my whole life, of my childhood, my youth, getting beaten.
Wow.
My thing is, and just to take a quick little pause, because
okay.
I have several issues with this story. If you're so embarrassed, why are you talking about it? Why is it a headline right now? I think, honestly...
That's not fair. It's because it's something he thought about, and then Vulture's doing an interview with him.
What do
so
you
he's
mean?
He's looking back at what he was thinking. Like, just because you're embarrassed about something, that doesn't mean you can't be vulnerable and share it.
No, Shira. That comes from a person that doesn't even know what the definition of discretion means. I think
when
it's
you're,
like...
You don't know he did this interview. Could have been, like, in a moment, like,
he shouldn't be talking about
coffee.
It. It just feels weird that he's talking about it and when it's, like, done and over with.
But
and
it's
he,
not done. People are still... If you're going to interview Lee Daniels, the first thing as a journalist you're going to ask is about all of this.
I feel like... Here's the thing. I talked to... I was looking on social media responses, and everybody felt the same way about, like, how comfortable is it that he's still even bringing it up, especially
still,
if you're embarrassed.
But it's still... because it's still open-ended.
But my thing is, you can't be... Like, he's a quote-unquote a mentor to Jesse, right? And so you're now not... As a mentor, I would expect you to just leave it alone, not have anything else to say about it. You came up, you showed up, that was great. But now that you don't know what the end goal was, just don't say anything else. And especially if you're embarrassed by it, don't say anything is kind of how I feel.
Listen, I guess I give him credit just for being honest and real and vulnerable. So I don't really overthink it in that way.
It's not just overthinking it. It's just
I just think people are angry at everything. That's just me.
So after the whole scandal kind of engulfed the show, because that whole Jussie Smollett thing probably really ruined the kind of the legacy of, you know, Empire in some way, Fox announced that the show's sixth season premiering this fall will be its last. So Daniels continued to say last week that Smollett will not return to the show for its final season, but the director and producer is still holding out hope that there is some truth in Smollett's original story because of his love for the actor. He says, of course, there's some doubt. I'm telling you that because I love him so much, that's the torture that I'm in right now, because it's literally, if it were to happen to your son, your child, how would you feel? You would feel, please, God, please let there be that glimmer of hope that there is some truth in this story. He continues to tell Vulture, that's why it's been so painful. It was a flood of pain. I think Lee Daniels has gotten in trouble for talking way too much. He's been in a lot of drama on his own, which is why people felt like, okay, he had no, like, real reason to kind of be bringing this up again.
It's his show and his baby, and it's basically canceled because of Jussie Smollett.
But when you are a person that's already known in the media to kind of really stir up the pot on other situations, and you really don't have great relationships with a lot of people around you that are industry-wise, they would expect you to someone that you're talking about that you feel like is your son or, you know, your child or something, or like if you're that's your mentoree, you wouldn't say anything. You would just kind of let it go
by
the wayside.
That's so Hollywood. I think he was just being honest and real about something that was a pretty crazy situation.
Actually, I don't think that's Hollywood. I actually think it's appropriate. I think for sometimes not everything should be discussed out in the open. I think some things should be kind of left to them, you know, to yourselves, you know? I don't know. It's interesting. He continued on to say, he said, we weren't there. I can't judge him. That's only for the effing lady or man with the black robe and God. I had to detach myself and stop calling him because it was taking away the time I have for my kids, the time I have for my partner. It was affecting my spirit and other shows, everything.
I applaud him for this. I don't think this is too inappropriate or out there. I think this is a real crazy traumatic thing that happened that is so, like, you would never imagine it could be like almost your worst nightmare, and he went through it, and then this is just an honest look at what that experience was like.
I just think everyone else on the cast, like Taraji and like the other cast members, have not spoken about it anymore. And honestly, because Shira and I are
publicists,
and I are so divided, and I think because Jesse and Taraji are very, very close, she's not going to speak about it because she doesn't need to. It doesn't involve her, like it doesn't really involve him. But they're still part of the show. But since we're so divided, give us a call. Let us know your thoughts on this whole entire thing, because I love getting calls from y'all and letting y'all.
We like getting
let us
into
know
arguments with
exactly.
Each other.
So give us a call 833-77-CALL-Q 833-772-2557 because I think he's in the wrong for talking about it. I don't appreciate it, you know?
All right.
I'm just saying, but we have a lot more coming up in What's the Tea. But right now, don't forget to give us a call and keep on with the stories, because there's something going on with a Polestar, which we're talking about because obviously their show premieres today with season 2. But one of the stars got into a major altercation. Honey, it was rough. We're going to be talking about it. You're listening to Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan on New Channel Q on your radio and radio.com.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan.
All right, let's get back into What's the Tea, our entertainment pop culture stories of the day. And okay, so there was this shocking video of one of the Pose stars who has actually been on our show.
Yes.
It was intense. So this shocking video came out showing the Pose star actor India Moore, or actress India Moore, fighting a Trump supporter and basically stomping on his sign outside of Trump Tower.
Oh.
Now, I was debating on talking about this just because we love India, she's so strong about her activism. But this one actually, this video kind of actually got a little violent, and people had to really kind of step in between them. Hmm. It was a man, so let's just get into the story. So India was filmed stomping on a Trump supporter sign before trying to run off with it just across the street for Trump Tower in New York City on Friday. It's basically sparked a whole entire scuffle. Moore, who stars on the FX show Pose, was filmed stepping on the sign that read "Re-elect Donald Trump, Keep America Great Again 2020." In this video of the incident, Moore is heard saying that she didn't want Trump supporters as fans of the show. The owner of the sign, I guess Dion Cini, was with a small group of Trump supporters who recognized Moore and spoke to them about the FX series. Wow. Which is why she's saying she didn't want Trump supporters as fans of the show. Well, Cini says he tried to prevent Moore from taking the sign away. Basically, he tried to grab the sign out of Moore's hand, but they wouldn't let go. And the video of the incident showed that. Cini, an entrepreneur living in Manhattan, told DailyMail.com that he allowed Moore to step on his sign because it was indestructible. He actually...
What a statement.
I mean, you know, powerful, right?
Yeah.
Dion actually continued to go on saying that the actor came over, started kicking a sign, and then threw it to the ground. He even, in his statement, when talking about India, misgendered them and used he, him pronouns. And I don't want to do that. And I really kind of don't want to read the statement, to be honest. Basically, it was just saying like that India kept continuing to stomp. And basically, the guy, Dion, was like, yo, you can't really hurt it. I've had other people kick it before. And then he continues to say when India tried to take it away, that's when Dion tried to stop her or them. It's like a whole thing. I'm trying to be careful.
Is India non-binary?
Yeah, India's pronouns are they, them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
And so the two engaged basically in a shoving shooting match before two other men stepped in. Now, I know we kind of have a clip of the video. It's a very visual video, but just you can hear the scuffling back and forth.
Okay.
Because the Dion, you can see him like literally pushing India, and it's just super bad. Here we go. Here's a clip.
Oh my. This is personal property, sweetheart.
You guys are fans of my show, and we don't want to be fans of your show.
Oh my.
Okay.
So, yeah. So, finally, a New York Police Department officer stepped in and pulled Moore aside. Cini said that NYPD counterterrorism police are a constant presence outside of Trump Tower. He said the officers saw what was happening and quickly intervened. The officer and Moore became engaged in a spirited conversation. Cini told DailyMail.com that he filed an initial police report. He said that he has been holding pop-up demonstrations in support of Trump opposite of Trump Tower every week for the past 2 years.
Is that his full-time job?
I mean, clearly, because he doesn't have anything else to do. Cini says the goal of the demonstration is to show New Yorkers they don't have to be afraid to support the president. Now, he told DailyMail.com that this was the first time anyone has ever tried to damage or run off with his property. And at first, India didn't really say anything, but recently she took to Twitter on the incident saying, thank you for loving my community, fighting for us, supporting us, fighting for ourselves and others who are experiencing an increase of oppression and violence under this current administration. So,
wow.
My thoughts about this entire thing is, it's so weird that they recognized India and their fans, clearly are fans of the show, and they're talking to her, talking to them about the show. But it's like you're still supporting someone politically that does not care about the people that you're fans of.
I feel like there's a bit of a disconnect. Like there's a total disconnect of not being able to see how things align and one doesn't support the other or like the domino effect of hate. Like there is this thing where some people, they like to see a person like a Donald Trump as one thing and not look at everything else that is happening.
Well, it's like basically like half-assed like a allyship, in my opinion. It's one saying, oh no, like we support the LGBTQ community, we love them, but we voted for him because it works. You can't do that. And it's also, I saw something recently on Twitter that I reposted on my Instagram. It was like, if your partner or if your boyfriend is homophobic, that doesn't make you an ally, sis. And it's so true. It's one of those things where you can't half-ass be an ally. You have to either be full in, where you care about people that lose their lives in these marginalized groups that are fighting just to be them, or you just go on completely the other side. Like, how can you watch a show that touches on all of these things?
It's the disconnect of like as taking it in as entertainment, not realizing there's a real humans being impacted.
Well, the show is based off of real life.
I know, but people are so not understanding and having such a lack of compassion and empathy. They're just like, oh, wow.
Or comprehension, it seems like. It's not even a lack of empathy, or it just feels like comprehension. They're not understanding what they're either watching or taking in. They're just watching it because they just like to see people of color dance around. It makes them feel good. They like to hear good music.
Yep.
But there's more to those stories, and there's lives that are being lost. And India is a very passionate person. They were on our show. And I mean, you should check out WeAreChannelQ.com because their interview, India's interview, was absolutely amazing.
Oh, yeah.
It's still one of my favorites. So I don't know. It's kind of crazy. Let us know your thoughts. Hit us up on social at WeAreChannelQ. Or like I said, head over to our website to find more entertainment stories of the day, WeAreChannelQ.com. And make sure to keep us favorited on that radio.com app.
Well, you might know him from Drake and Josh, a favorite on Nickelodeon years ago. Actor and musician Drake Bell is joining us right after this. You're listening to Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan on the new Channel Q on your radio and radio.com.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan.
So some of you might know him from the show over a decade ago, hit on Nickelodeon, Drake and Josh.
Uh-huh.
He was the voice of Peter Parker on The Ultimate Spider-Man. He now has a music career that's happening, a new song that we're going to be playing right here on Let's Go There. Please welcome Drake Bell in studio.
Hey, what's up, guys? How's it going?
Hi.
Thanks for having me.
You know, it's great to have you.
The nostalgia and the legendary just jumps out. It's like kind of wild to me that you're here. So thanks.
Thank you.
Because I think it's one, you've had such an amazing career as an actor, which I feel like, and just kind of growing up as a child star.
Do you consider yourself like having grown up as a child star? Is that?
I acted when I was a kid. Yeah.
So,
I don't know if I was like a star.
Oh wow. Are we being like modest?
No. Honestly, you know what? Actually, let me explain it like this. It's really interesting, and I'm not exactly sure why. I'm not entirely sure why. I think maybe because social media, but when the show was airing, and when you know, when like you were watching the show, and we didn't have Instagram, social media, all that kind of stuff, and the show was popular, but it was, you know, I mean, I get recognized maybe going to Disneyland or somewhere where there's like kids, you know?
Yeah.
But now the show has taken on a whole new life. I don't know, because there's a lot of popular memes, you know, for it, and they get shared and all this stuff. And now, you know, the show seems more popular now than it has ever been. So yeah, I mean, I was working a lot as a kid, but I wasn't really, you know, getting recognized, you know, walking down the street, you know, like it is now.
Well, do you feel like there was anything that you kind of missed out on? Is like kind of having, because I think one, you did working and you were acting as a child star, but that's not a normal teenager type of lifestyle, you know?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's definitely different, you know, working on a movie set or just basically just having a job, you know? I mean, having a job where with so much relying on it, you know, it's not just, you know, showing up for some, you know, a job a normal teenager would have. You know, you're kind of
like me going to Taco Bell right. when I was 16.
Yeah, you have
a Nacho Bell Grande.
You know?
Yeah, you have a whole
hot or mild sauce.
Yeah, you know, your mistakes are, you know, they can be overlooked, but you know, ours, it's like, oh, we have this whole production weighing on our shoulders. So it was daunting, but we were having so much fun too. You know, it was. I grew up, you know how we were talking before, you were saying you watched all that growing up.
Yeah.
And all that. I was obsessed with those shows and sketch comedy and SNL and Tracy Ullman and Carol Burnett and all of that kind of stuff. And so when I got to be on the Amanda Show,
icon.
Yeah, it was just being able to, it was like an amusement park. It was almost like I was on a ride simulator.
Yeah.
Like I went to Universal Studios, and I got to experience the Nickelodeon experience, but I get to do it every day.
Yeah.
You know, it was really cool. So as a kid, it's like, did you miss out on anything? It's like, well, what? Sitting at, like, going to school and being in normal? I was doing rad stuff and putting on wigs and making crazy.
You had a more creative outlet.
Being able to do all these different characters and all that kind of stuff.
And like now, like, do you think if you had been like a kid now or a teenager, maybe like would YouTube have been that thing for you? Like, would you be like a YouTube star?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, you would have totally been a YouTube star.
I mean, you're still a Nickelodeon star.
I have too much, for example, if I was doing something on YouTube, I don't know, it's too much like vlogging, you know?
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to. I was inspired too much by the classic, you know, Jerry Lewis's and Abbott and Costello's you know, Chaplin's and stuff and the art of filmmaking and the art of, you know, television and stuff and, you know, Mary Tyler Moore and Bob Newhart and Dick Van Dyke. And I don't know, I don't think that I would be drawn to be doing YouTube.
There's a respect for the craft that you just have too much.
Yeah, I think on one hand it's really cool that, you know, you can be able to go and you don't have to, you can just do whatever you want and you have access to being able to shoot it on your phone or cameras aren't that expensive. So kids that wouldn't have the ability to have a creative outlet now, I think that's rad. But I would still think that that's not the end result. Like I think you would be aspiring to something.
There's something so interesting because I feel like the way you use social media, you can tend to be very outspoken. Like
you can follow him at Drake Bell on social media.
Which I love, and I appreciate because I'm a very outspoken person as well. So I want to dive into that and so much more, of course, the music, because we got to touch it. We're playing and all that.
We're playing his new single, so don't go anywhere. We are hanging with Drake Bell right here on Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan on the new channel Q on your radio and radio.com.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan.
Okay, we are back with actor, singer, artist Drake Bell in the studio.
Oh my God.
Who's wearing rainbow running shoes, sneakers, rocking it for pride.
The mom just jumped out. Just running shoes.
Running
shoes. Ooh, I heard that in a minute.
I'm a cool mom.
I don't
mom.
Know if I could run in these.
No, I don't think you can.
No,
they're cute, though.
They look more like old vintage boxing or wrestling shoes.
Well, they're cool. Your styling. We were getting into some throwbacks.
They are
talking.
Gucci.
Okay. Oh,
we love a label.
We love.
Is this whole outfit Gucci? Are the pants Gucci too?
Yeah.
Fancy.
Mm-hmm. So we were doing some throwback memories to Drake and Josh, and of course some of the other stuff you were doing and acting and all that. But let's talk about your music.
Sure.
Transitioning more into that. Like, what was the inspiration? Did you always wanted to do music, and now it's time?
I've been doing music for forever. Really, I did music on both shows. Mm-hmm. I wrote the theme song for Drake and Josh. All the music that you heard on the show, I wrote.
I remember that.
And then we were able to...
You're talented.
Thanks.
And then we were able to write a lot of the music for the other Nickelodeon shows and stuff. So music's always really been a part. I released my first couple records during the show and did tours on those and stuff. So I've just kind of been continuously making music, and throughout that process, I found myself a lot of times ending up in Latin America, because I don't know, for some reason one of my records did really well out there, and then I started to be able to cultivate a big fan base out there, and every time I would go, I'd play these massive festivals and with all these other, you know, big artists, and I would hear the music out there and kind of get the vibe, and I came back and this last time I recorded a song, and I was like, you know what, I think I gotta do something in Spanish, you know, because I do cover songs in Spanish live, but they would just be covers or whatever, and they love it and stuff, or I'd speak to them in Spanish and stuff, and so they would so I'm like, man, I gotta do something in Spanish for them, so and something original,
yeah,
and so and that's what. That's how I ended up writing the song and making this song. And then all of a sudden, yeah, I don't know. Every record is different, you know. But now it's like sort of just like reggaeton, I guess.
I was wondering when I first heard this song, I was wondering, it feels like such a huge leap from where you've been and what you've done to now this. Yeah. How easy or authentic was that transition for you?
Well... I don't know. I don't really think about it. You know what I mean? So when you say like how like authentic,
you're not Latin.
It's just how inspired have you always been from the people and the culture and the music.
I think it's just, yeah, I mean, when I was doing it, it just felt natural because it's like, that's what I, you know, wanted to do. It didn't feel forced. I guess that's what I was looking for. It's like, no, it didn't feel forced. You know, obviously there were daunting moments when I'm like, do I sound too white right now, or like, is my accent coming through? Like, can you hear my terrible accent? But then no, you know, I had friends in there helping me, like, no, you know, say this more like this. And, no, that sounds great, you know.
And our producer Vanessa said you sound like an amazing Latin artist.
Yeah, because
clearly she speaks for all of Colombia.
Let's play the song. You got her a seal of approval.
Set up the song because we want to play a little clip of it.
This is Fuego Lento.
Nobody knows what happened to forever. People come just to go, and then it's like whatever. But when we get close, hands on your skin, you make it rain and I could just have been. But why don't we both get a little wetter? We could get it all at once, run the river dry as hell and then be done. But trust me, that's not what you want. But trust me, that ain't what I want. I want a slow burn, hot with desire. Baby, hold up, don't blow out the fire. Slow burn, that's how I want it. Not in a sweat, never hurt nobody. Corazón, es el momento. Enamorarnos a fuego lento. Y amor, tu movimiento hace que arde y me queme por dentro.
Was a clip of Drake Bell's new song Fuego Lento.
Yeah.
can you tell us what the song's about? What was the inspiration?
What is the song about? Oh, you know, it's just about not rushing into things and kind of like letting the fire kind of, you know, slowly burn and kind of you know, that kind of vibe.
I like that. In relationships.
Yeah.
Work. Okay.
I have a question.
You know.
So was it ever tough for you to separate the artist, like the musician Drake Bell, from the actor comedian Drake Bell?
Not really, because I kind of just played me on the show, which was pretty cool. You know, like I was into all this, the writers and producers kind of tailored the characters really around us, you know. I think they kind of tweaked Josh a little more because that, you know, but for my character, all the music I liked on the show was the music I dug, and I got to write the music. They weren't like giving me music, and a lot of the comedy and kind of stuff was sort of, it was very natural. It was like they wrote in my our voices, you know, and which was really cool because our names were Drake and Josh,
so
it wasn't weird for, and also the songs that I was releasing on my records, that I was writing for my records, were the songs that I was putting on the show. So if somebody came to see me live, it wasn't like, they weren't confused. You know, they weren't like, wait, why am, okay, now I have to go see Jesse so-and-so, and I know him as Drake on the show, and I know this music that he does, but then they come and see, and I'm like a country artist.
It wasn't like
doing,
Miley Cyrus and Hannah Montana, where she had that real disconnect, and it was really hard for her.
Yeah, no, it just made sense. So it was kind of easy that way.
Yeah, because I mean, it's you're so right. It's very easy to kind of figure it out. But I just think the industry was so different then, where I feel like they put you in like, okay, so you're in this lane and this is what you're doing and you can't do anything else.
Yeah, but I think that always goes, I think that, you know.
Well, you still feel that way now?
Yeah, I mean, I think that happens all the time, you know, even with like all artists, you know, it's like you always have to, whatever your last record was, you know, it's like, you're always judged by like what you did before, and you know, and people think like, oh, that's what you are, and you know, and the real artists are the ones that can kind of like transcend that, you know, like you mentioned, like Miley, it's like that she had such a hard time, and then you know, she reinvents herself, and then she reinvents herself again, and then reinvents herself again, and then you know, and it's like those types of artists who really are able to withstand that kind of stuff.
So what's next after this? So you have the single, you're touring a bit.
I'm touring all the time. So I actually was just in Mexico this weekend. We were playing a few shows. I go to Torreon next weekend to play a festival, and then pretty much just constantly on the road.
I love it. Drake Bell again.
And then new music
right
coming
now.
Out.
Yeah. New music. All right, so let's talk about that.
More Spanish stuff.
More Spanish stuff.
So you're going to do like a whole Spanish album.
I don't know about, I mean, I don't even know about making records anymore because everybody's just buying singles. So I'm just going in the studio and making records and popping them out. And then, you know, some of the stuff I put in that kind of frees you up to kind of be able to do a couple of tunes over here, collaborate with these people over here, do something completely different, do something, you know, you don't have to make one cohesive record and it's like, oh, this doesn't sound like this record, so let's put it on the back burner for something later or something. We can just do whatever we want.
So you actually enjoy that more instead of like, because I feel like that, especially because there is like, everyone feels like they have like a short attention span when it comes to taking in music.
Yeah.
Do you feel like, oh, can people sit with a project and actually like take it in? Yeah, or do you just like, oh, I miss
the process of really, you know, thinking of, okay, what is the tone of this record and what are we trying to say and how are we going to put this all together? And it's like making a movie, you know? I miss that process, but that process is kind of just to satisfy yourself now. Mm. You know, it's really, now I just like getting in there and having the freedom of pumping out as much content and as much music as possible, you know? You know, and being able to do any type of genre, you know, not being pigeonholed into only doing, you know, one sound or something.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, that's great. What advice, like, do you have a lot of the, you know, younger child stars coming to you now for, like, advice? They try to reach out. Like, how do I become like you?
Yeah, my phone's ringing off the hook.
They're asleep, sliding in your DMs.
I mean, you had a lot to say about the All That reboot, didn't you?
No, stop it. It's because I'm so biased. It's because I love All That so much.
All That was amazing. But it's not, do you think they should have made it for the generation like us, or is it to take a new spin?
You know, I don't know. I'm sure it's going to be fantastic.
I think it's going to be cute.
Yeah, it's going to be great. I don't know. Yeah. They're going for a younger audience, I think.
It's like Blue's Clues. Yeah. They have a whole new Blue, too.
It's like, it's like when they got the new guy for Blue's Clues, too. I was just as upset. Well, you know what? I'm just a purist. That's all it is.
It just seems
like he wants to live in old Hollywood.
I mean, but my thing is, you know? In some ways, to me, though, I do feel like it feels lazy. I think a lot of times it's one of those things where can we not come up with something more? I think that's what was so special about the 90s and the 2000s.
Yeah.
And the
2000s. Yeah,
come on, you could vent. This is a
safe space. Yeah, you was over here about to go in.
No.
He's really, we told him not to swear on the air, and now he's just like,
he's just railed it in. Don't
you
get
say,
sleepy.
You say that as if I just came in. And cursing like a sailor.
I wish.
Whoa, tone back the swearing there. Not on the air.
No, you just don't know how many people come in here and they just start cussing. We made people so comfortable where they're just like.
That is true. Yeah. You forget you're on the air sometimes.
You do. Well, Drake Bell, thank you so much again for
being
here.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Check out the new song, Fuego Lento.
And I'm sure more
to come. You can hear his rants. Maybe not here, but definitely on his social media.
Oh my God. I don't rant.
Ranting is a beautiful thing.
There's nothing wrong with ranting. I rant so much. Yeah. Do you not understand?
If you like ranting, it'll you'll get me a follow, sure. Go to my social media.
For more arts, for more art and music, and...
for the occasional tweet, go to my social media.
That's one of the reasons why I continue to follow you. One, because I'm just a fan of you, and then you are so honest, because I feel like we've lost that from a lot of people, and as in, like, celebs that I look up
to. Yeah, well, yeah, that's true. Yeah, well, there's a lot of fake.
Yeah, keep being honest. Don't be fake. Come back to the studio when you have new music.
Sure.
Coming up, it's Hear Me Out Tuesday. Speaking of venting, we have our favorite therapist on.
Yes.
We're talking about point systems when you're in a relationship and it's like a tit for tat situation. How to get through that over it. Yeah. After this, you're listening to Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan on the new Channel Q on your radio and radio.com.
Can I tell you something just between you and...
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan.
Okay, it's Hear Me Out Tuesdays. We've got our favorite therapists from the Gay Couples Institute, Sam Garanzini and Aleph Haki Yee. Welcome back.
What's up?
What's
Hello.
Up? How was your pride?
Wonderful. We had such a great time. It was so nice meeting you guys, too.
Yes.
That was such a treat.
It was. We were live from the Abbey for everyone who might have listened or not listened, and finally we all got to meet in person because we do this every Tuesday, but it was great to meet you guys. And now this topic today, keeping score. Let's talk about that. What does that mean to keep score or do tit for tat in a relationship?
So this topic today is really for everybody who feels kind of neglected in their relationship, where they feel as if they're just not, their needs aren't being met somehow, or they find themselves bending over backwards for their partner, doing a lot of things, you know, being the one who, you know, does things around the house and then gets treated as if they're lazy, or the one who doesn't seem... even though they might not be employed or they don't have a job right now, they try to make up for it in a lot of other ways that they think are meaningful, and it just doesn't seem to register, and they find themselves just not feeling valued.
Yeah, that's so interesting because I think it's both, you know, doing the chores and then you're told you're lazy. But then I also think it's one of those things like, can it be dangerous when you get into the sexual favors point system? Because I feel like that could be fun. And then if it continues, it could kind of be like, okay, this is getting old.
Yeah, see, so what we have there is like the one person that responded to this, he said his partner has a kink and that's all that they seem to do, but the partner's never interested in doing anything but that.
And sexual, like, I'll do this for you if you do something for me, you know, wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there can be a little bit of that, but you can hear in the tone, even as we talk about this, that there's almost like a score keeping going on. Like, we've done this X many times and we haven't done that I want to do this many times. And what I wanted to remind everybody about is we know there's been a lot of nice research about relationships that when people start keeping score in a relationship, it's a sign of an ailing relationship. Mm-hmm. And I can prove it to you very easily. Have you ever had a friend where you say like something similar to, you know, we always go over to Kyle's house. Why don't they ever come over here? That's a sign of an ailing relationship. So if you find yourself keeping score or making comments like that, that's the sign that something needs to be addressed.
Or if you're thinking about it, like, what if there was a moment where there was, like, obviously trust issues and there's always something that people are, like, your partner's throwing back in your face. Like, if, you know, they want you to do something and they're like, oh, you just did this, like, you know, so many times ago, it's kind of, like, not allowing you to change. It's kind of keeping you in that box. I feel like that can be also a way of, like, keeping score in some way, right?
Absolutely. And I think when we talk to a lot of our gay couples or same-sex couples out there, they're really frustrated, where it's like, I'll do this for you, and there's nothing I wouldn't do to support you, to give you what you need and want, and you do it for that person. And when you ask that person to do something back that's similar, they won't do it. So it's really disappointing and it's frustrating. Yeah.
Yeah, I was a bit in a relationship with my ex like that, where I feel like maybe I'm like putting too much on myself credit, giving myself credit, but I feel like I would do anything, like if he was sick and all that. And then when I was sick or needing something, I would have to ask, like, it'd be like, come on, please, can you do this? And it'd be like, when do you need it by? It was just like always these conditions in a way. And that got really frustrating.
Yeah, so what you have there is actually, that's kind of a cool one you brought up there. We know that some people have, there is a lot of meaning, like there's a story behind it or a reason behind the way they'll want to be taken care of when they're sick. And it almost like it symbolizes something. They want somebody to notice, and and there are people that don't have that as a larger value system, and they will sometimes throw that back in their face and saying like, "Oh, you're just being needy or whatever, or you should just get, you have all your cold medicine. Why don't you just get better?" And that's not really what it is. It's that they want somebody to notice, like, "Oh, you're not feeling well, what can I do for you?" And that has a lot of meaning, and there's really nothing wrong with that. And ideally, you would be in a position when you're not sick to talk about that with your partner and just put that out there, like, "Hey, this is a value system thing for me. It actually means a lot. It's a time where you could really turn toward me and get a lot of points in the emotional bank account."
Well, yeah, that's actually interesting because I want to talk about that more, that value system, because how do you balance, keeping kind of a checklist of everything that you want in a partner and being like, okay, they're willing to do that, they're willing to go this far, they're willing to be a ride or die, but then also not making sure you're not keeping score in some weird way. Like, what's that balance?
No problem. We should get into that.
Oh, let's get in. We have a few minutes. Yeah, we have a few minutes.
No, I thought we had to go to a commercial.
We almost did. My bad. I thought we did.
So what we have there, I mean, what this field of psychology used to think in the 70s, that it was like a contract, that it was kind of like give to get. And that's how marriages worked. Mm. And there was a lot of books written about it back then. And now that has been really disproven, because it's not about give to get. It's just simply give. And we know that healthy relationships look, and this is true even with new ones like you're talking about, Ryan, where they have this atmosphere simply of give. And when you have two people that are giving a lot, then the score-keeping piece kind of really evaporates, because there's a trust that develops that the other person is just going to continue to give, and I'm going to continue to give. That is the sign of health.
Yeah, that's so, I love that. And yeah. I think the fears, and I want to get into this after the break, of like, what about long term? Like, I wonder where this comes from, where there's possibly fear of like it just being like, oh, it's hot and heavy right now, infatuation. Yeah. And like, can I expect this long, forever or in the future if this relationship continues? So how do you maintain that giving as the relationship it gets long term? So we want to get into that on Hear Me Out Tuesdays right here on Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan on the new channel Q. Don't go anywhere.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan.
We are back with Hear Me Out Tuesdays with Sam Garanzini and Alapaki from the Gay Couples Institute, our favorite therapist, as we continue our conversation about keeping score in a relationship and how we can, get over that when that happens. Now, before the break, we talked about how when you at the beginning of a relationship, you're dating someone, it's that fun honeymoon period. Maybe there's a lot of giving, so it doesn't feel like you're keeping score. Well, I think a lot of people might think, oh, well, that's just because it's the beginning. So is it possible to maintain that energy if you, move into something long term? And how do you do it?
And so how you do it, that's a kind of a cool question, is how do you do it? Well, couples build this atmosphere of what we call reciprocity, where there's not really giving and keeping score of what they gave in order with the hopes of getting something back. What they do is they really create this atmosphere of just giving. And one of the hallmark ways that they did it was that they are continually doing what we call taking one another's temperature about how things are going in the relationship. And so almost proactively having kind of a connection time where they check in with one another and say, "Hey, how are things going?"
And then how does that, I guess, incentivize or inspire giving?
So one of the things, as you mentioned, is how do you keep it going? Mm. It's a weekly ritual that the couple would go through to say, how are things going this week? Anything left on process? Mm-hmm. What do you need from me in the next coming week? Whoa. So you take this on a weekly basis so that you can take each other's temperature and tweak and adjust as needed.
You know, that sounds so easier.
Your question, no. Oops, sorry.
No, you're fine. I was just saying it sounds easier said than done. I feel like a lot of times those conversations can be very uncomfortable.
Often in the beginning, when we teach people to do this, those can be very long conversations. And then they get shorter and shorter the more they develop this, as we encourage it to be like a weekly habit of where they take the temperature of how things are going. Back to your question, though, Shira, I think I get what you're asking is, how does that inspire giving? And so what we know is when someone's reaching out to you saying, how can I be a better partner to you this next coming week? When that is the atmosphere that you live in, that inspires other people to give themselves and to continue that atmosphere. Does it make sense? It creates an atmosphere of really just a lot of like of the word like yes.
Just yeah. Open arms. Yeah, it's juicy. I like to say it's a juicy dynamic. But then also I feel like when you give, like you need to give without wanting to receive in a way, even though we all deserve to receive. Like you can't give thinking you're like going to always get something back. How do you get exactly there as an individual even?
Yeah.
And it really was that question of, hey, how do you think we're doing? And then how can I be a better partner to you through the coming week? And when that continually comes up as the atmosphere, you can hear, it's not how can I be a better partner to you this week so I can get all my other needs met. Mm. It's just how can I do it? And when that's the foundation, actually a lot of stuff gets easier. When we check in with our couples, like even 4, 5, 6, or we've had our doors open for almost like 12 years now. When we check in with people a long time later and say, what out of all the stuff that we taught you are you still doing? It's this.
That's
They're
awesome.
Still having that kind of weekly check-in.
Yeah, so I guess how do you respond or deal with a partner who's is not functioning as a team and working towards these common goals?
I think reminding, this is why I like this exercise that we would share with everyone as well, is the structure of the exercise provides the stamina, the motivation to give it a try. That, you know, weekly, this is something you guys will talk about. Sometimes they'll go longer than others, but it really provides that structure for the two of you to have some basis to work off of.
Yeah. So have the conversation, maybe go to therapy if that still doesn't work.
For
maybe
sure,
it's time to end things.
Sure.
Okay. Thank you guys so much. Again, Hear Me Out Tuesdays is every Tuesday right here on Channel Q with the best therapists around. Mm-hmm. Sam Guerinzini and Alapaki. Thanks again.
Absolutely. And if you want to see this actual exercise, it is there just sitting right now for you on our blog. You just go to gaycouplesinstitute.org and hit articles and then just search State of the Union. And
okay.
There's the three-step format.
Awesome. Thank you and have a great night. Love it.
Awesome. See you next week. It's a pleasure.
Bye.
Now, coming up, we've got what's trending in the news, top of the hour, and our question of the day. Listen up. Does having a daily routine make you happy or bored? Give us a call right now, 833-77-CALL-Q, 833-772-2557.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan.
All right, we're about to get into our Q of the day.
Yeah.
But first, we're going to be talking about what's trending in the news, top of the hour right now.
Let's get into it.
Okay. Hey, the Democratic debates are coming up. NBC announced today the 5 moderators for the first Democratic presidential primary debate set for later this month. Savannah Guthrie, Lester Holt, Chuck Todd, Rachel Maddow, and Jose Diaz-Balart will moderate the debate.
Ooh, which will, finally, yeah, we're getting closer to the debates.
It's happening.
It's my, like, political Super Bowl.
Yeah, it's taking place at the Adrian Arsh Center for the Performing Arts in downtown Miami over 2 nights on June 26th and 27th. Both debate nights will have the same format. Lester Holt will moderate the first hour with Guthrie and Diaz-Balart appearing alongside him. Holt will also appear in the second hour, and then Todd and Maddow moderating. That's from NBC News. In total, 20 candidates will participate in the 2-night event. Oh my God. With 10 taking the stage each night.
So yeah, it's going to be very interesting because there's so many people, but also I'm thinking about it now. It's probably going to be on like during our show. And so we'll have to kind of like give live updates.
Yeah, we'll do a live play-by-play.
Yeah, we should do live updates. I'm telling you, we're ESPN,
we will.
But for politics, so yeah. MSNBC.
With some fun other things that we throw into there. Now, Botswana decriminalized homosexuality today in a landmark decision by the nation's high court. The high court rejected sections of Botswana's penal code punishing gay sex with up to 7 years in prison, deeming it unconstitutional. Finally, the ruling stated that penalizing people for who they are is both disrespectful and discriminatory. You think? And said that the law shouldn't deal with private acts between consenting adults. It's also just like a complete violation of human rights.
I mean, you know, bigger picture
that
there.
Too. In recent years, Botswana has taken other steps towards protecting LGBTQ rights. The High Court in 2017 ruled that the government should issue a transgender man documentation reflecting his identity. So there you go. That's coming out of Botswana. Now, in more news about our environments, and what's his name say? The guy that you think is hot? Bill Nye, the science guy.
Oh, I love Bill Nye. Oh, my God.
Yeah, he basically said it's not like decades away. It's happening sooner than we think.
Like
climate change.
Right now. He was
the world
saying
falling
other
apart.
Okay, turn it off.
I don't want to hear Jared and Allie right now.
Anyway, I do not want to hear
them. Let's talk about this, though. Carbon emissions from the global energy industry last year rose at the fastest rate in almost a decade after extreme weather and surprise swings in global temperatures created extra demand for fossil fuels. This comes from BP's annual Global Energy Report, which is an influential review of the market. It revealed for the first time that temperature fluctuations are increasing the world's use of fossil fuels in spite of our, you know, efforts to tackle the climate crisis. The recorded temperature swings, days which are hotter or colder than normal, help drive the world's biggest jump in gas consumption for more than 30 years. So if this isn't a sign that something needs to happen and change, I don't know what is. These atmospheric carbon levels are leaping. And carbon emissions climbed by 2% in 2018, faster than any year since 2011. And so something needs to be done. So just be aware. I'm not going to get into a whole rant about it.
I mean, you kind of already did, but I was just going to say that I feel like everyone, especially here in California, our Los Angeles area, was like, well, it's still so cold. It's still so cold. And now it's jumped up to like 91 degrees. It's been the hottest days of my entire life, and I'm not looking forward to it. It's the worst because there was no balance in our you know, energy and our climate. That's balancing our cold weather and our warm weather. It's like, it's still, I think next week is supposed to be actually cold. And so it's like very weird. It's I just don't know.
It's
we
actually
really,
causing us to
spend, alarming.
To consume more or use more energy.
Mother Nature's pissed.
Yep. Basically fighting back. Okay, that was what's trending in the news. Top of the hour right here on Let's Go There. It's time for our question of the day. Does having a daily routine make you happy or bored? You can call us right now, 833-77-CALL-Q, 833-772-2557. We want to hear from you. We were inspired to have this question by because of a New York Times article and our lives, according to producer Vanessa, who wrote a note, and our lives stuck in routine. We have to be here every day. No, it's a great thing. I mean, every day there's new stories. And for us, I mean, even though there's a routine in our lives, I feel like things switch up constantly.
Yeah, I think we get to cover so many different things and talk to so many people that it's like one day is just not the same. But I do think when doing a lot of the same things are putting yourself into a moment of like wanting to make sure you're doing this and you're doing that and just making sure. I don't know, because routines for me are all about structure and knowing like, okay, this is what I'm doing to get to the next level and this is what I'm doing to get to that level. And so for me, it just comes into like, I like a good routine. I like to know what's going on, but I think people can ruin that for you.
What do you mean people can ruin that for you? Are you being a victim?
No, I don't think I'm being a victim. I think different things, like people in different, I don't know. It's just I can explain it more.
There's people that comment, whether it be work or friends, that ruin the vibe for you.
Yes.
Okay. I mean, that's true. That's true. We got to take personal responsibility where we play into that. But in the New York Times article, they talk about this thing called hedonic adaptation. Hedonic adaptation. The tendency for us to get used to things over time and what to do about that. And in a 2016 study, it estimated that 63% of us suffer from boredom at least once over a 10-day period. It won't kill us. But researchers have found that chronically bored people are more prone to depression, substance abuse, and anxiety. So what are we all going to do about it? Well, we've got...
Just keep feeling anxiety and using all the substances.
No. We've got some advice
Sign
that doesn't
up.
Include what Ryan just said.
Sign me up.
And a professor of psychology and business that is all about habitual behaviors joining us after this. And we're going to talk about how to get out of that daily routine to make you not bored.
I wonder if they're going to tell us to quit our job.
Okay.
Should we just quit on the
I guess we'll see. After this, you're listening to Let's Go There with Sheer and Ryan on the new Channel Q on your radio and radio.com.
Call Channel Q right now. 833-77-CALL-Q. That's 833-772-2557. We are the new Channel Q.
That's right, because we are into our Q of the day. Does having a daily routine make you happy or bored? Yep, that's our number. 833-77-CALL-Q. Just add it to your favorites on your phone.
You might as well, honey. What are you doing?
With your life. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we have some responses on social media.
Yes, we sure did ask everyone our question of the day. What do you do? Does having a daily routine make you happy or bored?
Yep.
Miranda said, happy. I make sure to schedule time for breaks. So if there's something a friend wants to do, I can do it. Kenyetta says, so happy. It's amazing when you've worked on a foundation, can maintain it and have levels of consistency in life that allows you the freedom to be more spontaneous in other areas.
True. I do believe you get rewarded for focus and discipline, but if you can find the balance between creating those routines, like morning and night routines, I think are really important to mm-hmm. get you set and create a foundation. But then if you can have the flexibility to, you know, create some change throughout the day, you're set.
Well, interesting, because Andy said bored. I need to change things up or I find reasons to stop doing the routine Ooh. Task. It depends. Terrence also says it depends on the purpose of the routine, the use of it, the feeling, and the value of it. It can make for some and not for others, which is interesting. I think when we talk about daily routines, I feel like it's not just like your wake up, your morning routine where you're doing this and you're doing that, or your schedule. It also can be like your workout routines where it's like the consistency of that. If you stop doing it one time, it's like you're done and then you feel terrible about yourself. It all kind of plays into it, where it's like if your routine isn't set or if you don't have the motivation to continue that routine, it can be hard.
Yeah, but that's when you plateau, is when you don't change things up. So you got to know yourself, have enough self-awareness to change things up when you need to.
Let's ask the professor on the line.
We've got Professor Wendy Wood here, professor of psychology and business at the University of Southern California. And her research looks at how we form and change our habits along with the ways we explain habitual behaviors. Wendy Wood, welcome to the show.
Hey.
Hi.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. So what do you think about this? In this New York Times article, they talked about hedonic adaptation, the tendency for us to get used to things over time. What is up with that concept that they're talking about there?
Yeah, it's a very natural process. It happens whether we want it to or not. Our bodies and our minds adapt to what is most rewarding in a situation, as well as what's most painful. Mm-hmm. So over time, we respond to it less. And that can be good if, say, you're starting a really difficult exercise routine and it's not all that pleasant. Mm-hmm. Over time, you're going to get used to it. Not only will your body get used to it, but you will adapt so you won't feel the unpleasantness as much.
Yeah.
So that first mile you run you can think of that as maybe the worst one.
Yeah. I sure do, honey. I for sure do. I think, and also when I think about routines as well, like it's something about even your work routines. Like if you are not doing something that it just feels like it's not changing, kind of like that classic 9 to 5 where you're sitting at
a
desk and it's just like, oh my God, is there anything else that I can do? Can it change up a little bit? How can people kind of break out of that or realize that they're kind of in this routine that doesn't make them happy?
Yeah, so you're identifying the downside of this hedonic adaptation is that we sort of lose connection too with the things that we enjoy over time. So changing things up. In the classes I teach, my students always want to go outside when the weather's good, and it's often good here in LA.
It
and is. They want to do things that change up the classroom experience so that it feels fresh and they can enjoy it more. And I totally understand that. Makes sense. It's true with us with our jobs as well.
Yeah, and you obviously encourage that, so it seems like your students go with it. But what about all of us who are, you know, at jobs and we find it's getting monotonous? Like, maybe we don't want to quit, but how do you mix things up and get other people, I guess, okay with that? Because, you know, sometimes if other colleagues see that or bosses, maybe they're not into it, but how do you enroll them in that possibility?
Yeah, so you need to figure out what it is in your job that you really enjoy and then figure out ways to do that in a new way, so to change up the way you typically do that. If you really enjoy emails with one of your colleagues, then figure out ways to do that in a sort of a new way so that you'll be interacting.
Send different emojis.
Yeah, or send a Slack. Instead of an email, exactly. Send a Slack. Send an iMessage.
Or maybe me, you know what, yes. I find like
it's
having
colored font.
Yeah, like I also find sending like, yeah, fun pictures. All right, make sure there's HR.
Like fun pictures.
No, but like a GIF or yes. Like yeah, even yeah. Taking, instead of having a meeting in your office, like take a walk. Whether maybe if you live somewhere where it's cold or it's too hot, you know, you could just walk around the building even or go to a cafe versus the boardroom or something. Something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yes, breaking it up some way will sort of liven up the experience for you and allow you to feel good about the parts of your job you really like again.
Yeah. What about just like lastly in life, if outside of work, you just feel like life sucks. I don't even know what to do. I feel stuck. How do you use kind of the things that you preach to get out of that?
Yeah, well, again, it's trying to think about what you enjoy and then figuring out new ways to do it. I mean, you sometimes see this in relationships, right, with good friends that you have, that if you start doing the same thing over and over with them, even though they're wonderful and it was exciting to begin with, it can get a little predictable.
Yeah.
So figuring out something new to do with a friend, with a partner, spouse, something that will help you learn more about them or learn more about the world or about yourself is likely to relieve boredom.
Well,
I love that.
Real quick before we kind of wrap this segment up, I really wanted to know, because we said earlier that, you know, a 2016 study says that, you know, over 63% of us suffer from boredom at least once over a 10-day period, and it can cause, like, people to be prone to depression, substance use, and anxiety. Is it really just all on, like, just not being happy in your routines? Is it just more to that, like, just with life in general? Like, can we do you just blame it on the routine just in general?
Well, I think it's just a normal response to doing things repeatedly in the same way. You just have to learn that, yes, it's very efficient, but you will lose contact with some of those emotions that you experienced initially when you did whatever it was. So it's a normal part of life. You just have to figure out how to reconnect with the positive experiences and use it to sort of dampen your experience of the negative.
Yeah, and just a reminder, everything from driving, take another route to work or back home, like add in a new hobby, go somewhere different over the weekend, just get out of, like, you could have structure while not always doing the same thing. Wendy Wood, thank you so much again for joining us today.
Oh, lovely talking to you. Bye-bye.
Bye. She was lovely.
I loved her, too.
So I just find that whole thing very fascinating, and I do think we can all create more joy in our life if we just change things up.
And for some reason, not going to lie, and I'm probably switching the subject right now, but she honestly made me feel like she could cook a really good chocolate chip cookie.
I think you're just hungry.
No, but I just feel like she just knows how to bake really well. She just seems very sweet. Like, she makes her cookies with love.
Yeah, I love it.
Yes,
okay.
Yes.
Now, New York is breaking a record for pride. decide what they're doing to celebrate in our Yaz Queen of the Day coming up in 7 minutes. You're listening to Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan on the new Channel Q on your radio and radio.com.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan.
Okay, it is time for our Yaz Queen of the Day.
Yaz Queen.
So the great-granddaughter of President Franklin D. Roosevelt will honor her family's legacy in the LGBTQ community by unveiling what's being billed as New York City's largest rainbow pride flag. Mm. How big do you think that's going
to
be?
That's what I'm trying to figure out. Like, if it's like the biggest, is it just New York City's biggest, or is it the largest in like life?
It's it measures 12 feet by 100 feet.
Ooh. So, I don't know measurements. Someone call somebody at Home Depot and help me figure this out.
The staircase at Four Freedoms Park, which opened in 2012, is located on the southern tip of New York City's Roosevelt Island, will be decorated in rainbow colors starting Friday. And the newly bedazzled steps will be officially unveiled during a June 15th Ascend with Pride ceremony to coincide with World Pride, being held, of course, in New York for the first time in honor of the 50th anniversary of the Stonewall Uprising.
It's actually huge. It's on the steps.
It's huge.
No, the steps are very long. Yeah. So it kind of looks like... It kind of reminds you, it's not like those steps, but it kind of reminds me of like Rocky Steps in some ways, because there's multiples. And they're so nice. They're beautiful.
It is beautiful. Great for, definitely Instagram worthy. Just saying. Beyond Instagram worthy, but.
I know.
There's going to be a lot of pictures.
There's more about our culture than Instagram, Shira.
True. The installation will remain in place through June 30th. Julia Ireland said she believed the display was a fitting homage to her great-grandparents, Franklin and Eleanor Roosevelt. Imagine if your great-grandparents were Franklin and Eleanor Roosevelt.
How classy. No one could tell me anything. I'd be like, do you know who was my great-grandfather and grandmother?
The Roosevelts, she said, would have included the LGBTQ community among those for which they advocated and fought if they were alive today. She continued, our concept of human rights is always evolving. The idea of freedom is not static. Part of the park's mission in commemorating and celebrating those freedoms is to educate current and future generations and to inspire them to redefine and reimagine those concepts for themselves.
I just can't wait to New York Pride. I feel like it's just going to be so beautiful to see everyone. I mean, World Pride is literally celebrating there for the first time. So it's going to be absolutely amazing. And the atmosphere there is probably going to be insane. The love is just going to be wild.
We somehow need to get ourselves there.
We got to.
Maybe we got to, what's it called?
Put your hitchhike.
Hitchhike.
Hitchhike all the way up to New York.
You know, we don't have the bunch to fly ourselves.
How dare you?
I'm just saying.
I feel like you just told our secrets.
No, it would be a better experience than we could like
That could be our stories that we could tell that Monday morning.
We could easily get a car.
Yeah.
Someone throw us a car. Okay. We're brainstorming. We're going to party with you guys in New York. Coming up, we've got Dr. Kristen Loveline in the studio. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan on the new Channel Q on your radio and radio.com.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan.
Okay, Dr. Chris from Loveline is here right now. Welcome back to the studio.
Hello, you two. Hello.
Hi. So our question of the day is, do daily routines make you happy or bored, and why?
Depends if we're talking about general life or sex. If it's general life, I think it makes people happy. It gives them purpose and structure. I work with some patients that struggle when they have nothing they have to do with their day for whatever reason.
That's true.
And they don't have like any existential purpose, so why go through the day? But if we're talking about sex or in relationships,
okay, let's go there.
Habits are the killer of arousal and desire.
Okay, so
all about newness and novelty, switching it up.
Well, how do you keep that going? Obviously, when there's something is new. Okay, he's getting into it here. He's almost licking the mic. Don't describe his actions.
He is a professional doctor.
Excuse me.
He is holding himself to a standard.
Thank you, Ryan. Always respect that.
Gosh.
Dr. Chris, so what is... obviously, you can have that at the beginning of... You know, relationship when you meet someone, how do you continue? It's interesting.
Everyone goes through steps, right? Okay. Usually, if we're approaching sexuality, it's like step one, we're going to make out. Step two, I'm going to touch your chest. Step three, I'm going to go lower. Step four, penetration.
Uh-huh.
Yawn.
Mm-hmm.
Yawn.
So I tell people the smallest tweaks and changes. Start and stop at different phases and periods. Whatever step three is, start with that being step number one. I'm trying to be radio friendly. Sometimes it's only step four. There are no other steps. You go right for step four. Like, you got to switch it up. Producer Vanessa's like, what are we talking about? Yeah, but you got to switch it up. Days, times, places. You know, arousal is about newness and novelty. Same thing with relationships. I tell people, we love familiarity and consistency, but it kills the excitement. So don't start your dating habits by making every night a blockbuster night.
Yes.
Oh, that date. Happens. Yes. That happens in my last
date relationship. As long as possible.
Every night was a Netflix night.
No, no.
And let me tell you, it was not Netflix and chilling.
It sure wasn't.
It was Netflix and me falling asleep
That's
on the couch.
Right. No good. No
Ooh,
good.
Ooh, Shira. So sexy.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on right there, but...
What is coming up on Loveline?
Oh, we got, I can't say her full name. We got Alaska from Drag Race coming on, and we're going to be talking about her new song, Vagina.
You can't say Alaska Thunder.
There you go.
That's how I would say it.
All right, I'll let you do that.
Speaking of, we'll be saying it soon.
Oh, you're having her on too?
Yeah, she's coming on our show like in a couple weeks.
Sharesies.
Of course, we love that.
Ryan, I know we had some more social media responses for our question of the day. Should we go to some
Oh, did we? Oh, my goodness. Okay, let me pull it up. Thank you, Sheer, for guiding me to that way.
Yes.
Yes, we sure did. And here they are.
Again, our question of the day is, does a daily routine make you happy or bored?
Okay, so we asked and you guys responded.
Delivered. Signed, sealed, delivered.
So someone said, to each its own. Personally, I like to switch it up. Kimberly said, bored. I am so awful with routine. I can do it for a month or two. Then I get so bored. Someone said, like a hamster on a wheel. Which I guess that doesn't really mean that.
Yeah, you're...
Unless hamsters are pretty happy on wheels.
When you get into routine, you're like doing things like hamster on the wheel. It's so automatic. And actually, someone actually said to me who's listening, a friend who's listening, wait, I'm trying to go to the text. He said that, you know, a routine can help you. Aren't we naturally inclined to find routines because it takes less mental energy from us? The thing is, I think science shows also that by changing up your routine, you rewire your brain. It actually helps you with, like, not age, your brain not age. Mm. So they always say, like, switch things up. Like, you have to create some mental stimulation. If you're doing the same thing over and over again, imagine how much your brain you're not using.
Yes. Okay,
something
so
to think about.
True.
It's because, you know, we're doctors and experts here.
I mean, you're the only one that has a psychology
exactly.
degree. Or just
All
a
right.
really good personal growth class.
Coming up on tomorrow's show, how do you handle making a huge life mistake? Ooh. We're going to discuss the best ways to handle those tough moments. And Nike's plus size mannequins are receiving backlash now. So what else can we get mad about? Because it seems like there's always something.
Yeah, it does. And I can't wait to talk about it and just the clear body shaming and hate for fat bodies.
Well, that's tomorrow. Let's go there with Sheeran and Ryan on the new channel Q, 4 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern. We are sending you love and light.
And honey, guess what? Remember to slay.
See you tomorrow.
Bye, guys.